athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
The New York Knicks with the 2-0 lead over the Boston Celtics. I'm going to put the blame squarely on Jason Tatum, and I'm going to tell you why. Also, a big-time wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers goes now to the Dallas Cowboys, and Davin Pierre, the head baseball coach at Grambling, going to join us today here on the program. Welcome to another edition of Box to Row. I am your host, Donald Ware. Thank you for making the program a part of your day. Whether you're listening to us in Pittsburgh on WGBN, or if you're listening to us on KAZI in Austin, Texas. A whole lot to get to today on the program. I also want to talk about the series between the Rockets and the Warriors as well. No Steph Curry for the next couple of games for the Warriors as well, at least for the next game, probably the next two games, as a matter of fact. And look, you could participate here on Box to Row. Hit us up via Twitter at Box to Row, BOXTOROW. Well, this is a... Look, I never saw this coming with the Celtics now trailing the Knicks 2-0. But I don't believe that this series is over by any stretch of the imagination. I also think that the Celtics, well, I think that the Celtics will win game three. I think if the Celtics win game three, then you're talking about a whole different series, one in which I think may go seven games. But if the Knicks win game three on Saturday, then the Knicks are going to take this series, right? I believe that the Celtics are going to win game three, which happens to be in New York. And let's take a look more specifically at game two and what went wrong for the Celtics in that game. Because I like to give credit to the team that wins a game than to say, more so than to say, why a team lost a game, right? So, but I think with this series, and in particular game two on Wednesday, because look, we in essence had a repeat of game one between these two teams when the Celtics had a 20-point lead in the third quarter, let it dissipate, and let the Knicks come all the way back. Well, even in that game, and I guess that's where we need to start, because we need to start towards the end of that game. First of all, you had a situation where the Knicks came all the way back, and then Jalen Brunson misses that shot off the glass. And I thought, okay, now we're going into overtime and the Celtics should be able to pull the game out. But really, Brunson wasn't great in the overtime. The other players made plays. And then also, I think, when Jalen Brunson missed that shot, to me, it was a carryover into game two, because Brunson in game two only had 17 points and he didn't shoot well from the field at all. And I think it was a bit of a carryover from that shot specifically, because in the fourth quarter in that game, in game one, he was unbelievable. But I think, you know, his reaction to missing that shot. Now, he did have a shot. I think he hit a couple of free throws in the overtime period. Okay, that was game one. game two, there was some carryover. And but this is the thing about that game in really. And, you know, I watched the entire fourth quarter. But I kind of turned away and turned back. And it's like I would turn to the game and the Celtics would be ahead by more, not just double digits, 10 or 12 points. They'd be ahead by 15, 17 points. I'd turn away, I'd turn back, and the Celtics and the Knicks would be within like 10 or 9 points, right? Turn away, turn back. And it was one of those things where with the Celtics were sort of up and down in terms of their scoring and having a lead and then the Knicks coming back, then expanding the lead, Knicks coming back. Then you get to the third quarter, you get it up to 20, and then the Knicks come back. But lots been made, and rightfully so, about the three-point shooting in this series with the Celtics. And it's been, just been atrocious. I mean, the Celtics are shooting 25% from three-point range. Now, I get it. The Celtics live and die by the three-point shot. It's been their mantra all season. And because of it, the Celtics have had more success than not. But even if you go back to game one, like the only shot that the three-pointers that the Celtics made down the stretch was the three-pointer by Derek White, which was a huge shot at the time. I think it either enabled the Celtics to regain the, I think it enabled the Celtics to regain the lead or maybe pull ahead. But the three-point shooting, just very bad. But like I said in the beginning, I'm going to place the blame squarely on the shoulders of Jason Tatum, and I'm going to tell you why. Okay, I had a chance. I saw Jason Tatum become Jason Tatum in 2016 when Duke hosted Carolina, and Jason Tatum went off, especially in the second half, and that is when Jason Tatum became who he was. But I'm not sure what happened to Jason Tatum, because if you watch that game, Jason Tatum played scared to me. He looked scared. He not only was he, because his shot was off, and so it's almost like he didn't know what to do at times. Even on the last play, let's look at the last play. The play where, because remember, the Celtics were down. It was about 12 seconds left. The Celtics were down. And Jason Tatum took it 94 feet coast to coast, gets the dunk. I mean, it was a quick bucket. And the Celtics ended up taking the lead. The Knicks came right back, scored to take the lead by one. Ball in the hands of Tatum. Now, the Celtics had a timeout, elected not to use that timeout, which I wasn't mad with at that point. And it's easy to second guess the Celtics leaving a timeout on the board. But I didn't second guess it at the time. But when you go back and look at the replay, there was when Jason Tatum was at the top of the key, he kind of fumbled the ball a little bit and he seemed out of sorts. And at that moment, that's when a timeout should have been called. It wasn't, but in hindsight, I mean, I didn't even see the fumble of the ball at that time until the replay was shown. Okay. But what Tatum did, I mean, if you're going to take that shot, because think about it. When he went up for that turnaround with two guys on him and Mikal Bridges came from his backside and blocked the pass, he wasn't even taking a shot. He was getting ready to pass the basketball. And that's what I didn't understand. Like, if you're Tatum and you're making that move and you fumbled the ball and he still had an opportunity to get to one of his spots on that left baseline from about 10 feet, he was going to pass the ball to Brown instead of shooting the ball. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, I saw a couple of those instances in game two where Tatum was not aggressive, and even down the stretch. Let's think about down the stretch. It was a case in point, I think it was inside of 2 minutes, where Tatum had a wide open three, and he was open for about a second. And a second is a lot of time. open enough that even with his struggles, because let's look at the numbers. Tatum in that game was 5 of 19 from the field. 5 of 19, and he only had 5 assists. If you're 5 of 19, your assists have got to at least be in double digits if you're that kind of player, because while he's not necessarily, he's not the point guard, and the Celtics can have a couple of ball handlers. It's not like it has to be exclusive to a point guard. Tatum handles the ball a lot. So to me, you have to have more than a 5 assists. But like I said, inside of 2 minutes, there was a play in particular. He had about a second where he could have even taken a dribble and gone right to the hole. He elected to shoot the 3-pointer and missed. Like, not only was he off in this game, in a lot of respects, he didn't know what to do. It's like he was lost out there. And it's like, man, you know, you want to go to bat for Jason Tatum, right? Because you think about Steve Kerr in a couple of instances in the Olympics electing not to play him. But this performance in game 2 showed me why there's some hesitation around this guy. Like, he's, from a skill standpoint, and when Tatum is on, he's one of the top 4 players in the league. I mean, he's got the size. He's not a great 3-point shooter, but he knocks them down. His mid-range game, his turnaround game, you know, his ball handling, his taking it to the hole, his explosiveness is all of that. But he lacked the confidence, more so than even the bad shooting. Look, guys are going to have off nights. And other guys had to step up as well, right? But Tatum, 5 of 9, took 19 shots, missed 5. And a lot of those shots were open shots. But he also, a couple of times, he had step back 3-pointers, even in game 1, when down the stretch, when that's not what the Celtics needed. So I'm going to lay the blame of that loss at the feet of Jason Tatum. I want to get your thoughts. Hit me up via Twitter or via X at BoxToRow, BoxToRow. Still to come here on BoxToRow, plenty of NBA playoff talk. Plus, we're going to talk George Pickens getting traded, the wide receiver getting traded from the Steelers to the Cowboys, what that means, and Davin Pierre, the head baseball coach at Grambling, going to join us. Keep it locked.
More of BoxToRow with Donald Ware is on the way.
The Body Armor State Games are coming this June to Greensboro. Don't miss out on North Carolina's largest sports festival of the year. Athletes of all ages and skills can register now at BodyArmorStateGames.org. Let the Body Armor State Games begin.
Listen up, guys. Are you experiencing any of the following? Fatigue, less drive, poor performance? If so, you may be one of the nearly 30 million men in the U.S. today dealing with ED. But did you know you don't have to pay hundreds for a prescription anymore? And you don't have to deal with the hassle of seeing the doctor or the embarrassment of going to the pharmacy for a certain pill. Now, with one free call, you can find out how Herbal Virility Max can help you feel like a man again. For over a decade, Herbal Virility Max has helped guys just like you put a smile back on their face with improved performance and drive. Call today and ask about our buy one, get one free offer.
Call 800-485-0821. 800-485-0821. 800-485-0821. That's 800-485-0821.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to Box Row. To
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Still to come here on Box to Row, Grambling head baseball coach Davin Pierre going to join us on the program. I still believe in the Boston Celtics to not only win game 3 at Madison Square Garden on Saturday. I believe in the Celtics to still win this series. Just got to make shots. That's the bottom line. We saw again, as I mentioned, in game two, where when the Celtics were making shots, the Knicks could not keep up. It's when the Celtics started missing shots, and not only missing shots, taking bad shots, bad three-point shots, that it enabled the Knicks to come back, and then the Knicks believed and closed out. Give the Knicks credit. You know, we can talk about better teams. Give the team the credit it deserves. I'm going to give the New York Knicks the credit it deserves, because even as recent as a couple of months ago, I was saying, give me Josh Hart, give me Jalen Brunson, and give me Karl Anthony Towns against any three players that you have. You give me your three, I'm going to give you those three, and I'll take those three. So I'm going to give the Knicks some credit. And Ken, before, you know, I want to talk a little bit here about the Timberwolves and Golden State. But before we do that, like, what is the deal with Draymond Green? Like, I don't understand his deal, right? Now, after the game, he gets a technical foul because he's flailing his arms. See, Draymond Green is, he flails his arms against guys, and then he tries to play it off like he got fouled by flailing his arms. And I think if you saw the game, you know what I'm referencing. He may have gotten fouled initially, and this also happened in the Houston Rockets series also, where the guy may have come up on him and fouled him. Yep, touched him a little bit, fouled him. Then he just flails his arms, smacks guys in the face. We've seen this throughout the course of his career. You know, let's think back when he choked out Rudy Gobert. I think that was last year. When he stepped on LeBron James in what was it? Was that game four of the NBA Finals? Game five? Four or five of the NBA Finals? May have been game four of the NBA Finals. Or game five, whichever one. 2016. He got suspended for a game, and it led to really Cleveland coming back and winning that series, right? He was suspended 25 games last year because of his behavior, right? And he still hasn't learned. Now, I get it. Sometimes guys play, in this instance, play with emotion. I got all that. Draymond Green is out of control. And Steve Kerr and the Warriors continue to defend this guy. Even after all of this, in terms of what happened in game two, you know, Steph Curry trying to calm him down, Jerry Stackhouse, all of these Golden State Warriors trying to calm him down, you can't even talk to him. And then he's trying to argue with the referee. He should have got thrown out the game after he got the technical foul. He continued to argue vehemently in the official's face. He should have gotten another technical foul and thrown out of the game for his behavior, right? Like, you thought, I never thought it would change, even after he got suspended the 25 games, went to therapy, still has not changed. And look, when you get caught up in the moment, sometimes it can be hard to control people when they get caught up in the moment. I understand that. But he's hurting his team. He continues to hurt his team. And he makes himself look bad. And then, not only that, after the game, he had some comments to the effect of, he doesn't want to be known as the angry black man anymore. He's sick of that narrative. What is he talking about? First of all, who even said that to him? What? Because I only was able to watch that part of it. And as I always say, context means everything. You know, what led him to say it? Was it something that someone asked him? This was an exclusive with The Athletic. It wasn't like a bunch of reporters around. This was only whoever was with The Athletic or whoever was filming that, that gave it to The Athletic either way. So it was like, what provoked him? Did the reporter or the camera person ask him about being the angry black man? I haven't seen anything to suggest that. It's just something that he brought up. And I'm thinking to myself, what in the world is Draymond Green talking about? The angry black man, that is a real thing. Okay, that is a real thing. That is a narrative. Not as it pertains to Draymond Green. Like, look at your behavior. What is he talking about? Like, it is like he needs to get himself under control. I don't know what it's going to take to do that. Steve Kerr continues to defend him. Well, and Steve Kerr says, well, what makes him such the player he is with the emotion can also be detrimental. Well, yeah, let's go back. Let's not forget. I think it's very, look, Golden State had three opportunities to close that series out and couldn't get it done. I'm not going to put it all on Draymond Green. But it was a big part of it because the Warriors needed him for, I guess it would have been game five, didn't have him, still had two games to close it out, couldn't get it done. Yes, I'm taking it all the way back 9 years ago because this behavior has gotten worse. That's the thing about it. Let me move on. Let's talk about this series. And look, Steph Curry not being there is huge, obviously. We saw that. Because it was going to be an uphill battle anyway for Golden State to win this series against Minnesota. Minnesota, as well as the Warriors played or have played since acquiring Jimmy Butler, the Timberwolves have played as well in that same time period. In other words, the Timberwolves maybe didn't start the season out wasn't great for them. The Timberwolves were hovering around 7-8, maybe even outside of the playoffs, to make it a nice run within the last 25 to 30 games of the season to secure the number, what did the Timberwolves get? The number six seed. To secure the number six seed. They had to work for that. So they played well down the stretch. And this is carried over. They bounced the Lakers in five. Now we can talk about we talked a little bit about it last year. Last week, Luka and the LeBron and the Lakers and all of that. But at the end of the day, you've got two of the premier players in the league that are at home now because of the Timberwolves. So I'm going to give the Timberwolves have been playing extremely well. But we knew this was going to be an uphill battle. A, B. Now you don't have Stephen Curry. That makes it worse. I heard all of this talk about now Jimmy Butler has to step up. Well, let's look at this thing. Like, Jimmy Butler, throughout the course of his career, hasn't been a guy. Look, as good, we can say Jimmy Butler willed Miami to two conference finals. And yes, he was the main contributor. He was the main guy, no doubt about it. But he had some good players in Miami, right? Adebayo, Hero. Like, he had some good players. It wasn't like he was doing it by himself. He was just putting the team on his back and carrying them. Yes, he would have these outbursts of 30 points and all of those kind of things. But he had good players. Well, I would contend that this Golden State roster without Stephen Curry is not as good as the Miami teams were. And look, to think that Jimmy Butler was going to be able to put this team on his back, look, he only had 17 points in the victory, right? He was only 6 of 13 from the field. That's an issue. He only took 13 shots. He's not that kind of player. He's going to be a guy that's going to get to the free throw line, he's going to create contact, he's going to get a lot of points at the free throw line. But he's not a high volume shooter. I mean, this is one of the times that I'm going to go to the numbers and go to the stats. You know, for Jimmy Butler's career, he only averages 12.6 attempts, field goal attempts per game. 12.6 field goal attempts per game. And guess what? On Thursday, he only had 13 field goal attempts. Not only that, when we're talking about Jimmy Butler, we're talking about him willing the Heat to two NBA finals in over a three-season span more recently here. But now you're talking about a 35-year-old Jimmy Butler. So to suggest that Butler really needed to step up, yeah, but he's not going to be able to get it alone. It's complex, right? Like, you want to call him a bat. He can be a Batman, but really he's a Robin, and he was not Batman at all. I mean, it's not even the fact that he only had 17 points and made 6 field goals. It's the fact he only took 13 shots. He's a dog. He's going to do some other things. He's going to pass him. He's going to pass the ball well, play defense. He's going to get rebounds. He's going to have an overall game. But points-wise, it's not his game, and the Warriors are in serious trouble. Now, going to give, again, I think the Warriors are done, as a matter of fact. Give all the credit in the world to the Timberwolves. And not only that, I mean, it wasn't like Anthony Edwards had a great game either. Though it was the Wolves were the team from the start of the game, and Golden State never had a chance. Now, they may be able to make it a little bit closer, but without Steph, this series is over. It is over. I don't even think that the Warriors are going to win another game. Your thoughts? You can hit me up via Twitter at BoxToRow, BoxToRow. Up next, we're talking with Grambling head baseball coach Davin Pierre. Let's talk some baseball here on Box Row. We're joined by a gentleman. As a matter of fact, he's in his fourth season as the head baseball coach at Grambling. And an important weekend series for the Tigers, as a matter of fact, going to be hosting Bethune-Cookman, who is in first place in the SWAC. And I tell you what, Grambling's right there in third place in the SWAC right now, can gain some ground. And, of course, Davin Pierre, the head baseball coach there at Grambling, joining us here on Box to Row. We appreciate the time, Coach Pierre. Welcome to the program.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Hey, Patrick, right here. This being your fifth Super Bowl, what do you remember most about this whole process with respect to the first Super Bowl? And when I say the whole process, I mean the preparation, not only for the game, but the media and all of that, as opposed to now. How do you kind of compare that? Is it still kind of fun for you?
Yeah, it's still fun. I mean, every Super Bowl is its own experience. But I think more than anything, it's just preparing, because you know the process. You know what it takes throughout the week, and it gives you more experience and more calm, where you're not worried, and you just continue to work to be the best version of yourself you can be, and learn from your previous Super Bowls, and hopefully you can play even better in the game when you get out there on Sunday.
Ron Washington, the manager of the Los Angeles Angels, you're old school. So you've instituted this deal where the players are not allowed to have cell phones in the locker room.
Well, you got a young group, and you're just trying to get some cohesiveness going on. What does goes on the inside of that clubhouse is our sanctuary. I really don't want to have a whole lot to say about that, because it's out there, and it's out there improperly. I'm going to leave that at that. I don't want to talk about that.
I got you. But I like it. I like it, Ron. I like it.
I appreciate that. That's because you have a sane mind.
Box to Row live on Radio Row. We're here at Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. And I'm going to tell you what. We've got a very special guest, right? He was coming over here to talk to us, right? Everybody wanted a piece of him. And now we're able to talk with him. He is the one and only Drew Brees.
Just hanging out, having a good time, enjoying Media Row. Enjoying the city.
Yeah.
You having a good time?
I'm having a great time. 15 years ago today, the Saints won the Super Bowl.
Man, that was a pretty epic time. It was a pretty special time. You know, that was an incredible journey, that 2009 season. Just the whole experience was unbelievable. It was surreal. And the city deserved it. The fan base deserved it. Not a dry eye in the house. It was unbelievable.
Kelvin Sampson, the head men's basketball coach at Houston.
Being raised in Pembroke and the Lumbee Nation was always a badge of honor. But getting the eagle feather is a sign of achievement and respect, and I think how you treat other people, never forgetting where you came from. I grew up in a time when there was segregation. My dad taught and coached in an all-Indian conference. I mean, coming from that area, I learned a lot of life lessons, but getting the eagle feather is a tremendous honor. But you know right away, it's something you share with a lot of other people.
It was Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson, and it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Dave Roberts, manager of the LA Dodgers, to be person of color and be the manager of the Dodgers, what does that mean to you?
There's not many of us in baseball to do things the right way, to hopefully give other people of color opportunity. Hopefully it just paves the way. So I think that for me, I definitely look at it as responsibility, but something I'm willing to undertake.
Michael B. Jordan.
And I think it's a testament to, you know, what HBCUs mean to people, you know, and having that community and culture and shining a light on the universities, you know what I'm saying, in a real way, and creating a pipeline from these kids in high school and making them feel good about wanting to land at HBCU. We have high talent, and often it's gone and shipped out to other places. It's never poured back into the community. So if we can create an environment that's cool and a beacon of light, and people want to feel like they want to be here, and so putting it on the national stage is really big. You know, most of the time these kids don't get televised games, you know what I'm saying, so be able to put them on Turner in a real way was really, really important. And then the brands and then the sponsors, you know what I'm saying? And getting, you know, the NBA, you know, scouts and looks to come in and hopefully like build this thing bigger.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip hop. And it's given me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them, and I always make them a part of it. I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people. And I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there. And that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
Kevin Hart joins us here.
Right now, I'm on cloud nine. This is the time where I'm in demand, so you make the best of it. You pick great projects, you get behind them, and you put them out. And the goal is to keep them coming. So that's making sure that you're in control of your destiny. And right now, I am.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio.
Man, listen, it's good to be here, man. Always excited to have a chance to talk some baseball. And then getting the chance to talk about Grambling makes it even sweeter.
Absolutely. You're Grambling bred and been with the program, been with Grambling a very long time, and we'll talk more about that. You know, a couple of games in a row you've won. But I want to get your thoughts. You're in third place, as you know, third place right now. In the SWAC, just your thoughts on the way the team has played so far this year.
You know, I think it's been the maturation phase for us. Obviously, coming off a championship year and doing it with a lot of new guys, high expectation, and then guys understanding that day in and day out, man, people give Grambling their best. So it's been that process of it, and I think we've been figuring things out throughout every series and getting better, and guys have stepped up. And so I think we are right where we want to be, obviously, in the hunt of things and with an opportunity to still win the division and finish at the top of the division. But we got to play a really good Bethune team who has been playing really well, who's sitting at the top of the conference, and we get them at home on senior week. So we're excited about the opportunity to compete and get a chance to see, you know, where we're at.
I just want to get your thoughts on the way you've played. So if you look at the first half of the season, maybe you played well, but maybe it didn't register in the wins and the losses. But now the second half, the wins and the wins are coming around. Just your thoughts on, I mean, has there been a sort of a tale of two seasons?
I don't know what is a tale of two seasons. I just know we try to play a competitive non-conference schedule in order to get us ready. And obviously you understand that, you know, you want to go out and win those games. And, you know, sometimes when you're playing against, you know, the Arkansas and, you know, play the Big 12 opponent in Houston and, you know, you got LSU on a schedule and things of that nature. And, you know, we play against some really good mid-majors. You know, you feel like you want to put your team in a good position to win. But if you win the SWAC, you got to play them anyway, right? So, you know, we feel comfortable with going out and testing ourselves in the non-conference. I think the thing I would say change is I think the mindsets change where, like, yo, we got a chance to do something special. And, like, it hadn't been done in years at Grambling State University. You know, I think 84, 85, 86, they were, like, back-to-back-to-back champions. But to just do it, you know, for our institution, it's been almost, you know, 20-something-plus years that it has been done. So we got a chance to have some have some history, man, in being back-to-back champions. And so, you know, as you get closer to that, the season getting over with, and you know you got a chance to be in the tournament, man, guys start to feel that vibe of doing something that's bigger than themselves. So I would think that it is it. You know, we lost 7 guys from last year's team, another probably 5 or 6 guys on the mound. But I think these guys are growing into understanding what it means to be at this point in the season and then what's at stake.
No, I think it's a good point, especially coming off winning the championship on last year. Do you feel like there are some similarities, maybe, you know, right now comparing it to last year?
This is a different group with a different journey that had different type of adversity. But I do feel like there are some guys that came off that championship team last year that didn't have as big a role now as they had last year. Some of them guys were more, you know, role players, and now those guys have stepped up into positions where they are everyday type guys now. And I think they've learned from those you know, endeavors that they had last year. So I think that's the biggest part of it, man. Some of these guys are now like, yo, we won a championship last year and I contribute to that, but now I get to be a major contributor to doing it this year. And I think that's probably the biggest factor, man. Guys understand that, like, yo, man, you know, I can make my mark here in Grambling State.
Davin Pierre, he's the head baseball coach at Grambling, joining us here on Box to Row. Of course, Grambling, the defending SWAC tournament champions. And as a matter of fact, Grambling sits at number 5 in the blackcollegebaseball.com poll, which the last poll came out a couple of weeks ago. How were you able to replace? I don't know. I guess replace probably isn't the best word, but speak to how you were able to, you know, you mentioned 7 guys from last year, not on the team this year. How were you able? I mean, I guess I have to, you know, replace those guys for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I think good recruiting, you know, finding guys that are going to, you know, not only, you know, be as good as those guys, but be able to keep us in position to contend. We knew we had some guys returning in Mason Martinez and Randy Reyes and Javier Martinez in the pitching staff, Ethan Bates, those guys that were going to, you know, be holding down the fort for pitching wise for us. But we felt like we just needed to build a roster that was going to be able to still be good offensively. I think we've done that. We only have 2 guys that return. Like I said before, these guys this year are making their own legacy. Like, you know, we return our 8th and 9th hole hitter in, you know, Chris Marcellus and then Martavius Thomas. You know, so both of those guys have been everyday guys. Now they were role players, you know, in that championship run. Chris now hits probably in the 5 hole for us, man. Has been having a tremendous season. And then, Martavius has been hitting from 1 to 2 to 8 to 9, just kind of roaming in the lineup, just depending on what the matchup is. And so he's almost been an everyday guy. Both of those guys, 100 plus at bats, though. So, you know, they are stepping up into roles where, you know, they're bigger than norm. So I think that's been the biggest thing. But we got talent here, man. And we do a really good job of getting quality kids in our program. And then, though, I think the team this year is a lot more athletic. We can do a lot more different things. I think when you look at our numbers now, man, the average is not as high as I would like it. But we still got some guys with some juice in the lineup. And, you know, we've been able to steal 100-plus bags to, you know, create offense some type of way. But, you know, when you lose guys that we lost last year, man, and, you know, and Cam Buford, who was the home run, you know, all-time home run hitter for us, you know, Kyle Walker, we lost him to the transfer portal. He's a, you know, starting second baseman leadoff hitter at Arizona State. Trevor Haddon, who was a stellar all-conference guy, Julian Murphy, who was a stellar, you know, player for us, Tiger Borum, you know, Jose Vargas, you know what I'm saying? Like, losing those guys is a tremendous loss. But, you know, we have been blessed to recruit well and be able to get really quality athletes in here that can keep us afloat, man, and keep us hunting in the hunt for championships day in and day out.
Davin Pierre, the head baseball coach at Grambling, joining us here on the program. So, I mean, I look at looking at some of the numbers, like Cameron Hill slugging 564 you. He's got 11 home runs. But, I mean, you mentioned he's one player. But also speak about Nyan Hayes because, I mean, if you look at he's got 9 home runs, but you mentioned the base stealing and things of that nature. I mean, he swiped 21 or 23 bags for you.
Yeah. And so that's another thing, you know, Nyan that hits somewhere between 1, 2, or 3 for us at times. I know he's been leading off for us for the past couple of weeks, but he's another one, really athletic, transferring in from Arkansas State and, you know, came to Grambling because, you know, he wanted to get an opportunity to play. And then more importantly, man, he wanted to get an opportunity to do something special. And so, you know, when you're able to get guys like Nyan Hayes, who's extremely athletic and for his size has some juice, and then you get Cameron Hill, who has been our 3-hole hitter or 3-to-4-hole hitter, man, and, you know, he is our power guy, along with Shannar Brown, who's 6'7", 20, man, like, you know, transferred in from ULM. You know, I think, you know, when you look at it with a lot of guys that we have, Aries Garner, who transferred in, you know, some years ago from South Alabama, like, you know, our program has been a program for minority players to come in, man, and to get in position where, first of all, you're going to have an opportunity to play. And second of all, man, you can play comfortable. Like, you know, we have a culture where we allow guys to be themselves. And, you know, I got a big personality, so I don't mind them having big personalities, you know. So, you know, I think when you have those guys that come in that transfer in, man, and now, you know, when they didn't get those opportunities at the other places or they got an opportunity, they didn't have a chance to get one back because of lack of success. When they come here and they go 0-for-4 and you tell them, nah, man, I'm gonna stay with you. You got another chance to do it. It just gives them the confidence to go out there and play well. And that's, I think you see that with Nyan Hayes and you see that with Shannar Brown. Like those guys that were at other schools, man, they get an opportunity to come here now. And now they're like, man, all right, man, he's sticking with me. And so it just builds confidence. And then those guys went out and they've played extremely well this year.
Couple more thoughts with Davin Pierre, the head baseball coach at Grambling. What did it mean to win that tournament, SWAC tournament championship last year?
I meant everything. I meant everything to the institution, meant everything to me being somebody that, you know, played at Grambling, graduated from Grambling. It's my institution. So I'm Grambling bred, you know what I mean? So when you're able to bring a championship to your institution and then you're able to bring a championship to the institution and then, you know, see the big fella in Coach Wilbert Ellis, who is the GOAT, you know, here at Grambling State University, when it comes to baseball, hug his neck, let him kiss the trophy and know that we did it, you know, and so it was a huge thing, but I gotta be honest with you, when I wear that ring at times and, you know, I thought that championship, getting that championship would just be like, all right, man, I ain't done it. But man, it just fueled something in me that wanted another one and want more. So, you know, I'm comfortable with saying that it was one of the biggest moments at our institution. But I really feel like the way we continue to play and the way we continue to recruit and we continue to, you know, build this program the way I think it can be, man, we can have a bit more to happen at Grambling.
Yeah, your thoughts on the, you know, and we talk about the transfer portal, but I think we talk more about it as respect to football and basketball. But how has, because you mentioned you lost a guy or two, but you were able to bring some guys in. So your thoughts on the transfer portal?
I think it's a gift and a curse, right? You know, sometimes, you know, for us smaller schools, whether you're a mid-major or whether you're a low Division One, when you got a really, really good player and the big boys want him and they put the money up for him, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're probably going to get him. For us, we want to balance in how we use the transfer portal. You know, we still want to, you know, get a few high school kids here and there to continue to keep that culture and that structure and that foundation. But we also want to be able to compete year in and year out. And the way you do that now is old wins, right? You know, the older players win. So it's a balance of how you do it. But, you know, I don't have a problem with the transfer portal. I know that you're going to lose some players here and there, and then you're going to be able to gain some. You just got to know how to navigate through it. And it's the times that we're in, so you either adjust or get ran over when it comes to the transfer portal.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Last thought. Thoughts on Bethune-Cookman sits in first place. You got an opportunity, really, to make some ground up on the Wildcats.
Yeah, a really good baseball program ran by a really good coach, and Coach Johnny Hernandez over there, man, at Bethune-Cookman, man, they have a really good program and really good players, man. They have a really good pitching staff. They pitch well, they defend well, they swing the bats well. It's a really good test for us this weekend. And I think that when you're looking at, you know, two of the better programs in our league, that's going to be big for us. And then being competitive, like I want this culture or this feeling this weekend to feel like the tournament, right? You know, so when you got two heavyweights going at it, the top three teams in the division, and they're competing to, you know, if they win the series this weekend, I think they can probably seal up the division title. Well, you know, if we win two out of three this weekend, well, now it goes down to next weekend of, you know, what happens, you know, when it comes to the running of or who's going to win a division. And so that's our goal, to win a division first, try to be the one seed, and then, you know, go from there. But, man, I'm excited to play against these guys. First time playing against them in conference, in a conference series, you know, because now we don't have a West or East division. We just play, you know, everybody within the conference. So I'm excited to play against a really good ball club at home on senior weekend. And, you know, the kids are excited, man. And we're gonna find out, man, you know, who the better team this weekend. And I think it should be a good contest between two good, really good teams.
Yeah, very well said. Davin Pierre is the head baseball coach at Grambling. He joins us here on Box to Row. As mentioned, the Tigers are number 5 currently in the BlackCollegeBaseball.com poll. Host a weekend series against Bethune-Cookman. Coach Pierre, appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Tigers.
I mean, appreciate it. Always good to, man, talk about Grambling, talk about baseball, man. Hell, baby, we be Grambling.
No doubt, Coach Pierre. We'll be back.
The Body Armor State Games are coming to Greensboro this June. Registration is open to athletes of all ages and skill levels in 20 different sports. The Body Armor State Games feature 11,000 athletes and 600 teams. Don't miss out on North Carolina's largest sports festival of the year. Visit BodyArmorStateGames.org today. The Body Armor State Games are proud to partner with Truist, Lowe's Foods, and Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina.
BoxToRow.com is the website for all of your HBCU sports needs.
From the game of the week feature to interviews
to the latest news in the world of HBCU sports, BoxToRow.com has you covered.
Ooh. Missed a week of From the Press Box to Press Row?
BoxToRow.com has all the archive shows. Don't forget to check out the All-American teams and weekly media coaches bowls.
From the Press Box to Press Row
and BoxToRow.com, your HBCU sports leader.
It's Donald Ware from the Press Box to Press Row.
Grambling head baseball coach Davin Pierre joined us in the last segment, and you'll be able to listen to that conversation one more time if you visit our website, BoxToRow.com, and you can click on the archived show links. And that goes for any of our shows over the past several years. As a matter of fact, at BoxToRow.com. Also, we talked about the Knicks and the Celtics, more so about the Celtics. We talked about Draymond Green. We talked about the Warriors and the Timberwolves matchup. I want to switch gears a bit here and talk about George Pickens, now a Dallas Cowboy. So the Steelers trade George Pickens, wide receiver George Pickens, now to the Cowboys. There's a couple of different dynamics here. Number one, I'm not really sure what Pittsburgh is doing right now. Now, certainly, you know, you go out and trade for DJ Metcalf. As a matter of fact, I was doing another show. This was back in March. The beginning of March, was doing another national show. And all of these, it was around free agency time, signing time. All of these guys were getting traded and signed these big contracts. It was the same day that Josh Allen signed his contract. I mean, a lot was going on that day while we were doing this show. And one of the bigger deals was DJ Metcalf to the Steelers. And when that trade came down, you thought about, wow, now you've got DJ Metcalf, stud wide receiver, right? You pair him with Pickens, a really, really good wide receiver who has an opportunity to be a great wide receiver. That is a good starting point. Now, the issue for the Steelers still, even at that time, and it's even an even bigger issue now, was who was going to play quarterback. But even during that time, you were saying, hey, it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. Like, Aaron Rodgers needs the Steelers, and the Steelers need Aaron Rodgers. Certainly at that point, because Russell Wilson was off the table. He had already signed with the Giants, which made sense. And look, I think that's going to be a solid signing. I just think that Wilson, it worked for a while, meaning Wilson and the Steelers, but down the stretch, it just wasn't a good fit. And it's not that Wilson's career is over. It just wasn't a good fit down the stretch. And I understand, and I even said, Russell Wilson's not the guy. Justin Fields, to me, was not the guy. The jury, to me, is still out on Justin Fields, and we'll see what happens now that he's with the Jets, another offensive coordinator, another offensive system. But I think that's part of Justin Fields' deal, but it's still, I'm not sold on him either, even from a standpoint of a skill set. I'm not sold on him, right? But you figured Aaron Rodgers was going to be the guy. If not, then the Steelers would at least look to the draft. Perhaps if Shedeur Sanders had fallen to the Steelers or some other quarterback. The Steelers not only have not signed, probably through, and I'm sure through no fault of their own, Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers is just a diva. Like, I never thought that I would say this, that Aaron Rodgers is the new Brett Favre. Like, all of these things that happened with Brett Favre holding the Packers hostage. And matter of fact, I remember it quite well because, and by the way, Box to Row, it's a shameless plug, but Box to Row will be celebrating 20 years on the air on August the 20th. We're going to have a celebration, and we'll have more information for you on that. It's going to be here in the state of North Carolina, and put that on your calendar. But my point is, going back, we were talking about, even during that time when this show first came on the air, Brett Favre holding the Packers hostage, what was going to be the deal with Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers sort of treated Love, not the same way, but it was a similar dynamic. And now, as Rodgers' career is winding down, and by the way, Rodgers, from a skill set standpoint, much better than Brett Favre from a skill set standpoint. Their careers are mirroring, because now Aaron Rodgers is in this mode of, you know, diva, you know, where am I going to play? Let me make a decision, putting teams on hold, all those kinds of things. I'm sure the Steelers at this point, maybe at one time, the Steelers may have been waiting for him, but not at this point. But if you're the Steelers, what do you have? Like, the offensive line isn't great. It was, matter of fact, it wasn't good at all last year. The running game wasn't good. Najee Harris no longer with you, rightfully so, probably a mutual decision, because Najee Harris, there was a reason, again, why the Steelers did not pick up his fifth-year option. And he probably felt like the Steelers aren't giving me anybody to any blocking. Right. And he's spent 4 years there, even though he's been over, I think he was over 1,000 yards all 4 years, but he was only averaging like 3.9 yards per carry. Right. But they did some upgrades at the offensive line. You still don't really have a running back. And now you've traded a star wide receiver after acquiring a semi-superstar wide receiver. Like, it makes no sense in the world. From this standpoint, you can look at it as a rebuild. You know, look, Mike Tomlin's not going anywhere. Like, he could have a losing season, which the trajectory as it sits right now, because if you're saying Mason Rudolph is going to be your quarterback, well, maybe, and I don't know, maybe they see something in Mason Rudolph. I mean, look, there are a lot of quarterbacks we thought their careers were over. I mean, Sam Darnold was one of those guys, and look what Sam Darnold was able to do last year, and now gets not as much money as he could have gotten, but he gets the money from the Seahawks, right? So maybe they see something in Mason. But the thing about Sam Darnold, he had a skill set. I hadn't seen that in the little bit of time that I've watched Mason Rudolph. Maybe they know something I don't know. But even if Mason Rudolph is your guy, now you've traded away a star wide receiver for a third-round draft pick, not in this year's draft, but in next year's draft. So the draft is already gone. And picked up some good guys in the draft also. But these guys will be rookies. They have to learn the NFL. Because while we can look at it from an offensive standpoint, and the Steelers are right now, as it sits, not good offensively as well, it is still an elite-ish type of defense. And you're wasting going to be wasting a year in mediocrity when it comes to that defense. TJ Watt, you've got Hayward in the middle. All of these guys are going to be a year older now if you're able to regroup in 2026. Like, maybe they say, okay, and maybe they're going to rebuild that defense also. Maybe they're just going to totally scrap it and build it back up. Because while it has been mediocre, and I'd love to hear from some of our listeners in Pittsburgh who listen to us on WGBN. You can hit me up via X at Boxtorow, BOXTOROW, or on my personal X account at DWare1, at DWare1, and get your thoughts, because that's the way I see it. Now, maybe they totally strip it down. Mike Tomlin's not going anywhere. Yes, it hasn't been great. They just made the playoffs, competed as much as they could against the Ravens, but they weren't going to win that game, right? You're probably looking at right now a team that may go 9-8 because the defense is so good, but they're not going to win. They're not going to make a Super Bowl run, but I still think that Tomlin's your guy. We've seen this from the Steelers. I mean, they've only had a handful of coaches in the Steelers' career. There's only been a handful of coaches, head coaches. So Tomlin's there. You build it, you break it down to build it back up, but they're going to have to make some serious moves in 2026. That's from the Steelers' perspective. What does it mean from the Cowboys' perspective? Well, you give another wide receiver opposite CeeDee Lamb, which is good. That's good for the Cowboys. But look, like, the Cowboys still have some question marks on the offensive line. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, Dak Prescott is a solid quarterback. He's not a great quarterback. He's a solid quarterback. Is he enough of a quarterback to get you? Oh, well, he's certainly, I mean, the Steelers would love to have him, that's for sure. But he's solid. But I think now that you add a George Pickens to that offense with a solid quarterback and a superstar wide receiver, that helps. The defense is studish, right? Elite-ish also. The problem is not, however, the talent with the Cowboys. It's the team as a collective. Now, we're going to see what Brian Schottenheimer and his philosophy as the head coach is able to bring to the Cowboys. But with the Cowboys, the problem has never been talent. It's been the collective. So now you add another piece. Does that make the Cowboys? Like, I've heard people now say, oh, the Cowboys are contenders. Really? Not really. They're not. They're not even a contender in their own division. It's Eagles, then Commanders, right? Then maybe the Cowboys, but I mean, this year, I'm interested to see what the Giants are going to do with Neighbors and Wilson and a defense that's pretty solid. Like, I'm not just dismissing the Giants this year and the draft picks they got, and we'll see what happens with Dart. Like, I'm not dismissing the Giants either. So to now say the Cowboys are a team that can contend in the playoffs when you still have, you know, the Rams out there. I mean, you still have the Seahawks that are on the bubble. You know, maybe San Francisco bounces back. Like, I don't think so. But it is a nice piece, and maybe it will allow for the Cowboys to be better. But the Cowboys really have to get out of their own way. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Davin Pierre, the head baseball coach at Grambling, for joining us today here on Box to Row. As mentioned, for all of our archive shows going back years, great content, great conversations, you can visit our website, boxtorow.com. And always remember to support those that support you. Box to Row is produced by DW Communications. Always make the same mistakes, cuz I'm bad in love. But you can't blame me for trying. You know I'd be lying saying, ooh.